This is Mame Warren. Today is the 12th of July, 1996. I'm in Lexington, Virginia with Ernie Williams, and we finally found each other. We've been running all over campus looking for each other. But we're going to make it worth our while here. Now, you are class of 1938.
Right.
Which means you went through Washington and Lee during the Depression.
I really did.
I'd like to know what it was like here during the Depression.
Well, I'll start off by telling you that tuition was $250, and that included a week in the hospital, and if you had to stay longer than a week, it was $2.50 a day. Pretty good deal.
Wow. But you didn't have to go to the hospital, did
you? I did, as a matter of fact.
You did? What happened? Why did you have to go to the hospital?
Well, I had a bottle of seltzer water. You remember seltzer water, where you took a tube of gas, and you had a wire-bound bottle, and you took this gas, I've forgotten what it was, to make fizz water, and it said, fill it up to the red line. Well, I thought, heck, if I filled it up a little further, I'd have more seltzer water to drink with whatever I was going to drink, booze. So I filled it up, and poof, it blew up in my face. So I went down to the hospital, and they gave me a shot, and they gave me a tetanus shot, and that time you could take a, I don't know if we can do it today or not, an equine or a bovine. The bovine is the one that I was supposed to have taken, and I took the equine, and that made me have hives all over. So I went to the hospital with hives, and not too long thereafter, a fraternity brother called on me, and I said, well, this is a hell of a place. I'm comfortable, but... He said, well, let's sue the bastards. And I said, sure. So we sued them. And they settled out of court. We got a total of $50, which we split down the middle, $25 each. That's a lot of money. A lot of money in view of the fact that my mother sent me $20 a month, which I could live on in princely fashion. Next to $25 was something special. So anyway, soon thereafter, the lawyer for the seltzer bottle company came over, and I told him I'd already settled for $50, and he kissed me on both cheeks and left.
That's great.
The hospital was where Stonewall Jackson's house is now.
That's what I was about to ask you.
Yeah.
That was when it was the hospital.
Right, uh-huh, the college hospital.
So, did you think you were in a historic place to be at Stonewall Jackson's
house? I don't remember having a thought about it. The fact of the matter is I didn't know then it was Stonewall Jackson's house. I thought he lived next door. But I really think where I was part of Stonewall Jackson's old house. I talk funny, don't I? I say out and house and about.
You sound like you grew up in Virginia. My husband grew up in Charlottesville, so he says a lot of the same kinds of things. So... You said that for $20 you could live in princely fashion.
$25.
All right, what was princely fashion back
then?
Oh,
I don't know. As I said, I had an allowance of $20 a month, which my mother sent me, and I did all right on that. I supplemented it by playing poker, and I played poker whenever I could find a game, which often meant that I had to turn in an excuse to Mr. Mattingly. He took one quality point away from you if you had an unexcused absence. So I would manage to be sick, and I mean literally sick. More often than not, it was a, don't put this in print, but it was a hangover sickness. So I played a lot of poker my senior year and liked it. Now, where do you want to go from there?
Well, I want to know what princely fashion means. What did you do in Lexington to live in princely fashion?
Well, I am most famous here in Lexington for having been enamored with a girl named Suzanne Knox. I'm pretty sure that was her name. I'm sure she was from Pittsburgh. And she went to Southern Sin. Well, in those days, there was a rental car place. It's right behind the Presbyterian Church, and now there's an insurance agency there. I saw it the other day, Chittum, Clittum, something like that. So a friend of mine and I were going over to Buena Vista to see this girl, and we didn't have any wheels, so we went down to the car rental place and got a car, which we drove to Buena Vista backwards. Now, it would be quite a feat today, but in those days, the road wasn't what it is now. It was two-lane road and very curvy. Somewhere between here and there, you went up to the top of the hill, and right there, you took a right turn. And it was a weedy road. We wove our way around, and finally, at the bottom of the hill, you went through a creek. There wasn't a bridge across the creek. You had to ford the creek in the car. So when we got to Lexington, we turned around and drove the car forward. We were afraid the police would stop us. We saw Suzanne Knox and some other girl. Then we came back, drove the car back up to the edge of town, and backed it back to Lexington. You realize the logic of that, don't you?
Well, I'd like you to explain it to me.
Well, when we could have turned the car in, there was no mileage on it. There was the 6 miles that we had in Buena Vista. So we drove it around a little while here and then turned it in. I think the total mileage showed 11 miles. But anyway, that was quite an experience. And you can make a story out of that.
I think so. Well, did you do a lot of road trips going to the girls' school?
Not really. I spent a lot. I very seldom spent a weekend here. I'd go home. My mother was living by herself.
And that was in Lynchburg.
And I'd sometimes go to Randolph Macon and Sweetbriar. I'm more often Randolph Macon than the other. And all in all, I had a fine time.
Now, what was the difference between a Sweetbriar girl and a Randolph Macon girl?
It all depends on who you know. I don't know why I started going to Randolph Macon. I met a couple of Randolph Macon girls over here, I guess. That was real notoriety. Nobody could believe that we did that because it was hard work. I'm talking about driving that car to Buena Vista. Really hard work. But we got over it. No other notoriety here.
Nothing at all.
I can't think of any.
Now, if I talked to your classmates, they would say, Ernie who?
Yeah, they would. Well, not really, since I've been class agent. I've been class agent for a long time.
Now, were you in a fraternity?
I was an ATO.
Uh-huh.
And ATO's house is now a B&B. It's out across from the Mayflower Inn. You know where that is? The Mayflower Rest Home or something?
Uh-huh.
And the ATOs went belly up when the worthy chancellor of the exchequer made off with the till. At least it's supposed he did. Field and Woodward's younger brother, Ernest Woodward, was coming in as president, and his father, a lawyer from Louisville, said, now look, before you take that thing over, get the books audited. And the books were, and there was some $35,000 discretion. Well, that's life and death for a fraternity. He was bonded, and I think the fraternity recovered maybe $15,000. So Steve Lee came from where, you shouldn't put this name in print, Steve Lee, mm-hmm. But he came down from wherever he was and said, it's all in the little black book. Well, where's the little black book? He says, all with the rest of the books. And there wasn't any reference in there to having bought anything at the back door, which he said he did. So I'm not sure of this. I think Ernie Woodward went ahead as president of the fraternity. And then soon thereafter, the fraternity couldn't hack it and went belly up.
Now, was that considered a long way to be away from the campus, or were there a lot of fraternities up there then?
There was two past that. The DUs were past the ATO house, and the Kappa Sigs were past it. I would say they were those three were the furthest away. And it was all right if you, quite often you could hitch a ride. There were five or six cars then in our fraternity. But most of the time we walked. It wasn't too bad.
So did you have to run up there for lunch and then run back for classes?
I can't remember. I don't think I had any afternoon classes. If I did, they were at a reasonable time after lunch. At one time, I arranged my schedule. I really didn't much care what I was taking, but I arranged my schedule, so I went to school on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. I couldn't do it, so I couldn't not go to school on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. So I was not too particular about what I was taking. It was just so I didn't have to go to school for 3 days a week. Mattingly was tough on you. You couldn't miss many classes before it showed up on your quality points.
Now, I don't know the expression quality points. What does that
mean? Well, my recollection is if you passed a course, you got 3 quality points. If you passed it with a B average, you got 6, and an A average, you got 9. I'm not too sure of that. Mm-hmm. But you worked right hard for 3 points. And if they took one of them away for having an unexcused absence, that was tough to make up. So, I'm not sure what else. That's about the end of it. I didn't have a very eventful life here. I played on the first lacrosse team that they ever had in Washington Lee. It wasn't recognized by the college. It was really a lacrosse club. It was coached by Dr. Fahrenholt, who was a chemistry professor and had gone to Oxford, could have been Cambridge. And there he learned to play lacrosse, so we got him to coach us. My recollection is that we had 2 games each year. I can only remember 1 of the 4. We played the Maryland B team, and I think the score was 33-2. It might have been 32-3, but it was on an island down in the middle of the river. And it was rock-strewn and didn't make any difference if it had been like the lawns at Wimbledon. We didn't have much chance against the Maryland B team, and they beat the socks off of us. I don't think the college furnished anything except a net. They might have given us a ball, but we had, let me see, I guess they had helmets and gloves, and you had your own lacrosse stick. If you didn't have it, you bought it.
Well, how did you know about lacrosse?
I went to prep school up in Maryland and played it.
Oh.
And we had a good coach, Long John Boucher. And so they were desperate to have anybody. And they had 3 or 4 Maryland boys on the team.
So I was about to say, were you instrumental in bringing lacrosse
no,
here?
No, not at all.
Well, what happened? Did the students ask for it, or did Professor Fahrenholt get it started?
I can't remember. I remember that somebody knew that I had a lacrosse stick, and out on that lawn in front of our fraternity house, near the street, we pitched baseball out there, and somebody else in the house pitched a lacrosse ball with me, threw it with me. I'm not too sure of it. It's in that vague, foggy part of the past that I don't remember much about. But we weren't recognized. It was a lacrosse club. It wasn't a W&L lacrosse team. And I've forgotten who persuaded the athletic department to line us up a few games. The 2 games, I think, each year. And then that was just about my athletic career here. I went out for baseball, but I wasn't good enough to make the baseball team.
Well, now, I understand Washington and Lee got pretty good at lacrosse, and it has a pretty good
They had ringers then. They had a good football team, too, and they were ringers.
So today, when you hear Washington and Lee, or certainly in the 70s, Washington and Lee was really well thought of for lacrosse.
It was planned.
Did you say, I was there at the beginning?
No, I've told 2 or 3 people. I've told Norm Lord about that, and he sort of worries me about it. Come tell me some more. But I said, I really don't remember too much about it. It wasn't much to remember. But this is a different class for lacrosse now than it was when they were good here. They had good boys, all from Baltimore, I think. And I don't know what the scholarship basis was. But there was a different class. I've forgotten what they call it, A, B, and C now, I guess?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
It's a good game.
So now, is it true that you never took a single commerce class.
That's very true.
Now, do you find a little irony in that?
Well, I told when Larry Pepper first, I didn't want to do this, have this building named for me. As a matter of fact, they wanted to name the library for me. And I said, look, to hell with that. I don't need anything named for me. I really don't want it done, so please don't do it. So then after some time, John Elrod, I can't remember whether he was president or about to be president, he and Larry Peppers called me up and said they'd like to come down to Florida and talk with me. And when they came, out of the briefcase of Larry Peppers, he broke out a document of whereas and whereas and whereas. And that had to do with naming the Commerce School after me. I would just as soon to not have done that, too. I don't revel in glory. Actually, I get very sentimental about Washington Lee, and I get very emotional about it. And many of the time I've tried to talk before a gathering here and been so emotional I couldn't go on with that which I was going to say. When I spoke at the dedication of the Commerce School, that's probably about as much conversation as I ever had without breaking up. And right at the end of that which I said, I just about broke up. So, John Wilson had said that when he was told about this sum of money that we'd given W&L, he said something about a student union building. And that suited me fine. I thought they were going to build it where this red brick building is, right down behind the Episcopal Church. I don't mean red brick, I mean red frame building. But for some reason or other, they decided they weren't going to do that. And so that's why they were looking for something else to name after me. And I didn't need anything to be named after me. It's very nice of them. And when I walk past it and see my name etched in bronze, I like it. But I had visions of that which did happening. And I don't seek notoriety.
So why do you get emotional thinking about what
I like this place a lot. I like it really because our son went here. He probably came in the fall of 58. I'm not sure. And then after 2 years, Frank Gillum, do you know who he was? He was the dean of men, dean of students, I guess he was. And he called our son and he said, look, you're wasting your time and your parents' money. Go in the Navy, go in the Marines, go somewhere. Come back in 3 years and we'll take you back. So he did, and when he came back, he was a different person. He didn't reaffiliate with his fraternity. He had no social life. He was really just a hermit. I think we were living in Lynchburg at the time, and we'd sometimes see him on the weekend, but more often than not, he just stayed in his room and studied. And when he graduated, he went to Cornell Graduate School and got an MBA there. I'm not sure why he chose Cornell. Maybe because even with his good grades, he couldn't get in Harvard or wherever else he might have. I don't remember him applying to any other place, though. And he met his wife there. She was getting an MBA in textile engineering. That's a hell of a degree for a girl, isn't it? And then he went to New York and worked for a chemical bank. She worked for Galien Lord, which is a division of Burlington Industries. And after 6 or 7 years in New York, they thought they'd better get out because they say it's easy to get hooked on New York. So he went to work for CNS Bank in Atlanta. He worked in their investment department, CNS Invesco. And after X length of time, and I can't remember what the X is, he saw an advertisement that Vanderbilt was looking for an assistant treasurer. So he called up, went up, had an interview, and got the job. after having done that for 3 or 4 years, he was offered the job as treasurer, and he declined it. He thought that he wanted to be out on his own and manage money. So he started a company called Southern Fiduciary Group against my advice. And I thought he'd do better to stay at Vanderbilt, where he had made X number of dollars, and he might make 2X or 3X or even more than that. But you have to make up your mind whether you want to eat well or sleep well, and he wanted to eat well, and he doesn't sleep at all. So he's been doing that. Part of the reason I tell you that is part of my affection from Washington Lee stems for what Washington Lee did for him. So why do I get emotional? I don't know. I went in John Wilson's office once, and I saw he had a Calyx, a 1938 Calyx on his desk, and I was sure that, I felt sure that he had it there because he'd asked the library to send it up so he could look me up and see what I did when I was in school, which wasn't much. But I had a fine time here. It's a great playground. So that's about it. You heard my life story.
Well, I want to know what kind of playing you did.
Playing?
Why was it a great playground?
It wasn't so much a playground in the middle of the week, but at the end of the week, either the girls came to us or we went to the girls. Another thing that I did, if I had to do all over again, I'd spend more time here than I did in Lynchburg. My mother was lonely. She had had a not happy life with my father. He died in 1938, I think. And when I went to Lynchburg, I spent most of the time with her. I didn't go down to, that's not so either. Sometimes I'd go down to Randolph-Macon and I'd have a date, bring the date by to see Mother.
Did you go to Fancy Dress?
Oh yeah, I had a good time at Fancy Dress. I had a good time all the time. Too much of a good time. Yes, I did.
So what was Fancy Dress like then? I haven't talked to anybody from your year before.
Oh, mighty nice. One Fancy Dress had a theme of Metternich, and I guess it was the Congress of Vienna. And people couldn't believe what it was like. They rented those uniforms from somewhere, I think it was Philadelphia. And when they had them down here, they were pretty authentic uniforms. They looked great.
Military uniforms?
I don't know. Whether they were or not. I guess what the Prince Metternich wore and what his enamorata wore, which was, who was? Marie Antoinette, maybe? I'm not sure. Anyway, that was a lot of fun.
Now, were they still doing the, what's it called? I want to say the form, but that's not it. Where everybody goes in and marches around?
You know, I don't remember. It was held over in Doremus Gymnasium.
Mm-hmm.
They came in, and they stepped up several steps because they stepped down several steps when they walked into the court. And it was pretty impressive. I never had a part in it. I mean, I did have a costume. If you were going to Fancy Dress, you had to have a costume. And I don't remember too much about it.
Now, I saw some pictures the other day from a fraternity house party, and everybody was in formal dress.
We all wore. Most of the time we wore.
Did everybody own formal dress?
I think so. Most everybody wore tails. You didn't have to wear tails. You could wear a tuxedo coat.
But you owned it?
I did.
Now this
and I had a cape, too, which is pretty fancy. And a top hat. Pretty jazzy stuff.
Now, we're talking the Depression here.
Well, my recollection is that a cape new cost me $27. And I can't remember what the top hat bought because I can't remember where I bought it. But it wasn't much.
Now, did the Depression have any effect on Washington and Lee?
If it did, I didn't know it. You know, we had dinner the other night at the Southern Inn down there on Main Street. And I said to the waitress, you know, when I was in college, if I didn't like the meal that the fraternity has, I'd come down here and get a plate of spaghetti and a bottle of beer, and it was 45 cents. She said, you're kidding me. Well, I wasn't kidding her. That's what it was. And it was a pretty heaping plate of spaghetti. So, I don't know. I liked everything about the college. I didn't work. I worked too hard. I didn't work at all hard the first 2 years, but the last 2 years when I had a lot of electives, I did like it. So the first 2 years I made nothing but C's and an occasional B. And the last year, at 2 years, I made A's and made the honor roll. I think that's what they call it. It was one step above the dean's list. But when you're taking things you like, learning is fun.
Now, what was your major?
Journalism. I left here and went to work for the Lynchburg News. And I worked on the morning paper, which I didn't like, because I was going to work when all of my friends were getting off. And I made $17 and a half a week, and I gave my mother $5 of that. I think she probably gave it back to me, or I charged to her enough gasoline or whatever to make up $5. So it was interfering with my courting, the same girl that I told you I'd gone to the first grade with. And so after probably 8 months, plus or minus a little, let me see, I quit the newspaper. And soon thereafter, I went in the Navy, which was fun. Marty didn't like me to say that. That the best time of my life was when I was in the Navy, but it was. I got scared, but I wasn't scared. When I was not scared, I was having fun. And that was between invasions. I was over in Africa and liked it. Liked everything about it except getting shot at. I didn't like that worth a damn.
Well, I bet you didn't. Now, you were a journalism major. I haven't talked to any journalism majors. Were there any professors in particular who were important to you?
Yeah, Tom Riggle. I go out to see him. As a matter of fact, he's a pen pal of mine now. No, I write Tom every now and then. I'm told he's sick. He lives on the road to Buena Vista, and his address is Glasgow. And it's back over there. It's tough to get to. He was a neat guy. But journalism school wasn't very big. My recollection is there were 12, maybe 15 of us in the journalism school. Right behind here, hanging over that, where are we now? I guess about right where we are now. There was a journalism lab in where they had a flatbed press. And you had to learn to set type. It wasn't very hard. Once you learned it where the vowels was, the rest of it was pretty easy. Did you ever set type?
No.
Well, neither did I. I did, but I learned just enough of it to get by.
So they taught you all aspects of the newspaper business?
Yeah, I think all aspects. I think so. I learned all I needed to learn for what I did when I went to work. I was a proofreader, and it wasn't much of a job, nor did it pay very much. That was leading to a job as a reporter, but I had visions of working at night, and I didn't want to. So I checked it.
Now, can you remember Tom Riggle as a teacher?
Sure.
Anything in particular?
No, I can't, really. He was good. He's very slow talking. There was another guy. I'm going to have to ask Tom what his name was. And he lived right directly behind the ATO house, so I had to be a slightly circumspect. I didn't want to make so much noise that he was going to come out there and belabor me. But I can't remember his name. The journalism school was a good school. I guess Columbia and Missouri were the best journalism school, but I think Ross and Lee was right up there with it. Robert E. Lee started the journalism school.
Now,
That didn't influence me taking the journalism.
Was Robert E. Lee talked about much when you were a
student? I don't remember him being talked about at all.
How about the honor system?
That was a factor.
Tell me about that.
Well, you were immediately aware of it when down by the gatepost, as you came into the campus, the gatepost, the next one west, I guess it's west, of the Episcopal Church, there were books and coats strewn around. And that was the first physical evidence that you had that something was a little different here.
Why did that mean something?
Well, that you'd leave something of value lying on the grass or leaned up against that post coming in. I think the honor system played a strong part here. There was a very prominent student who just didn't show up one morning, and it wasn't until sometime later we found out that I'm not sure what he did. I think you could take an exam home. And he took his exam home, and I think he fudged a little bit. I had lunch with a guy named Futch today. Is that his name? Professor Futch? And I remarked to him that Ollie Crenshaw lived directly behind the post office. It's a red brick house there, which at one time was the K.A. house. But when I went there, Ollie was living there. I don't have any recollection of Ollie being married. But when I got home for lunch, got to the fraternity house for lunch, I had a yellow pad, and in the yellow pad were two pages of a test that Ollie Crenshaw had given to me. And I don't know how, when I pulled them out of the yellow pad, you should take them in booklets, this wouldn't happen. I left those in, so I went by to see him, and I said, look, I got a problem. I left these two pages in the no problem at all, hand them to me. So he took them, and I'd have been in pretty bad shape had I not been able to include those two pages of that test in my test. Yeah. Washington Lee was an even smaller community then than it is now. And I can't help but feel it was a little closer knit. I lived in a fraternity house all 4 years I was here. That's not so. I didn't live there my freshman year. My freshman year, I lived in one of these dormitories behind me. And one winter month my freshman year, I think it was February, the law library caught on fire. And the law library was where the most northerly building in the colonnade part was located. It was a gray stone building and quite ugly. And they had the fire departments from Buena Vista and Stanton here. And it burned to the ground. For a long time, I kept one of the bricks, one of the stones out of the law library. The big loss was the law school. The big loss was the law library, because it took them some time to replace that. I don't know how they did it. But that was great excitement.
Did everybody come out?
Oh yeah, everybody was there. And it was quite a blaze.
So you were living in the dorms when it happened?
Yeah.
And did it happen in the day or the night?
Nighttime. My recollection is sometime after midnight.
And did everybody spill out of the dorms?
I'm sure so. It was big excitement.
I'll bet.
That's about it. You've heard it.
Did anybody have any idea how the fire started?
I never did hear an explanation. You ought to be able to go to the library here and dredge it up out of.
Yeah, but I'm wondering what people were saying.
I don't know. I never heard any foul play connected with it.
So then you watched the present Tucker Hall being built.
Yes, I think so. Yes, I did. I don't remember seeing it actually going up because it started right away. They took those gray stones down and put up this brick building, which everybody was excited about, thrilled about.
Why?
Well, because it looked so good at the end of the colonnade, being the next building not being incongruous, which it was before. My father went to Washington Lee.
He did?
He went, I think his class, was, he didn't do much. I think he really fluffed off. I fluffed off plenty, but not as much as he did. I know he went here 2 years. I know because I went to some records upstairs, and I could only find him having been here, and he had an incomplete both years.
How did you pick Washington and Lee?
How did I get here?
How did you decide to come here?
Well, I was going to Augusta Military Academy, and there was a guy named Frank Jones, who was a good friend of mine. But he played the same position on the football team that I did. He played it, and I tried to play it. And I thought he was going to VMI, so I thought if Frank was going to VMI, I'd go to Washington Lee. Lo and behold, Frank, when I got to Washington Lee, Frank was here too. So it wasn't I didn't go in for football. But that's really the reason why I came here. I came here because they would have me, and I think they would have me because they wanted that $250 in tuition. But it was really quite a place.
Do you remember your first impressions when you first came here?
I thought, I'd seen a lot of it. I first saw it when my father brought me over here. In one of the rooms just north of Washington Hall, there was a dinosaur in there. And I was pretty impressionable because I was probably 11 or 12 years old when this dinosaur was in there with names. He was a plaster dinosaur with initials carved all over him. But he was probably, I don't know, 18, 20 feet long. And you get dinosaurs make a pretty big impression. I don't know whatever happened to him. I've asked what happened to him. I thought maybe something like George Washington being stuck off in a corner in this building. I thought something like that might have happened to him. I guess the best, the most memorable thing I've done since I got out, I've been a class agent for a long time. And for our 50th reunion, we call ourselves the 38er Alligators. That's stems for when I was a class agent and was living at Hilton Head. And there are alligators all over Hilton Head, even now that it's built up. But I went to see a friend of mine who was really quite an artist. His name was Bal Ballantyne, and he had drawn the giant for the Jolly Green Giant. And to this day, he gets a residual every time you buy a can of peas at the grocery stores. Bal gets some little smittens. So I went to Bal and I said, Bal, would you draw me an alligator? He said, sure, I like to draw alligators. It's fun drawing alligators. I said, I want him very lascivious looking. He said, what? I said, horny looking. He said, sure, I'll do it. So he drew me this alligator, which we still use. And he had a cane with a W&L banner on it. He had a boater hat with a bite having been taken out of it. And now why'd I get started on that? I've been a class agent for a long time, and for our 50th reunion, the vice chairman was Jack Neal from Whispering Pines, North Carolina. Somewhere in the Pinehurst area. And I said, Jack, you don't have to do one thing. I'll do the rest. Find an inflatable alligator. So he found one. Crocodile D was in town. And under the marquee of the theater, there was an inflatable alligator. So Jack got him. And he brought him up here, and I said, Jack, that's just fine. Meet me over behind Washington Hall at 7 o'clock on the morning of this reunion morning, which of course was held down in Lee Chapel. So we got some gas from some florist in town, and we blew that alligator up. And we had the maintenance men climb up on top of Washington College, and they hitched that alligator. And there he was, flopping around in the breeze, 38 all over his underside. And it was great. We had a good time with him.
I've seen the picture.
Have you?
Yes. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, well, that's where how he came into being.
Well, I was wondering whether you climbed up there yourself.
No, I didn't. The fact of the matter, just in the last month or two, John Wilson has told me that if he'd known we were going to do that, he wouldn't have let us do it. So he was worried about the health of George Washington. You know, he was... have you ever seen him? He's in a room here,
uh-huh.
And his undersides are all eaten out. And
was he afraid the alligator was going to bite George?
I think he was afraid that somebody would lose their balance and grab George and fall off.
Oh.
The VMIs came over while I was in school and painted George red, white, and blue because somebody, the VMIs thought, from here had come over and painted one of their sacred cannons blue and white. So they were here pretty soon thereafter. And I don't know how they did that, how they got up through there, through that building and painted him, but he was.
Was there a lot of rivalry between the schools?
Not really. As a matter of fact, no athletic rivalry. There had been some way back, and it had caused some friction, so they cut it out. And lacrosse is they have a BMI Washington Lee lacrosse game. I've forgotten what they call it. And they play every year, but I think maybe even now that's the only athletic relationship they have.
So how often do you come back now?
Not that often. I came back right much during that campaign for Giants because I was involved in raising some money. And I was a vice chairman of some sort. I guess we average coming here two or three times a year. We come back here for this alumni college all the time. We're here for three of them now, but this is the first time we've ever been for three. Then we go on the trips, and you get credit. That 17 means that I've been here 17 times, except it really doesn't, because if you go on a trip, that counts as one, too.
Uh-huh. I need to flip the tape over.